Lampstand Press presents Weft History Audio, original material written by Scott Somerville, edited and read aloud by Nate Somerville, with color commentary provided by me, Ted the Thread,
and special appearances by Christina Somerville as Nellie the Needle.
Year 1, Week 3, Egyptian Polytheism and the Judgment of God. We'll be dealing with important ideas this week, the idols of Egypt and the judgment of God. Egypt was a proud and powerful nation that feared no other country on earth. The people of God in their midst were despised as slaves and feared as outsiders. That all changed when Moses came to town. The pagans, people who do not worship God, were impressed. God showed his power over all the gods of Egypt and began the first feast of the Passover and also freed the Israelites for himself. All in one set of amazing events. The history of these Israelite slaves is especially important to us because we are like them in many ways. As Christians in a fallen world, we too are strangers in a strange land.
Boy, oh boy, let me tell you about strangers in a strange land. This one time, I saw this girl, and she had blue hair, and then I looked the other way, and there was this boy. And he was bouncing up and down like a kangaroo all over the place. But I think he was on a pogo stick, so maybe that wasn't so strange. Then I went to visit some friends, and they had a goat in the house, like a dog. It jumped up on the couch, and then the furniture, and then it tried to eat the tablecloth. It was all over the place. I said, enough of this. And then I went to my cousin's house, and well, there she was, wearing a guinea pig on her head, like a hat. Strange, strange, strange.
Ted the Thread.
Yes?
We're not talking about strange people or strange places, as in weird. We're talking about strange, as in it wasn't their home. The Israelites' home was not Egypt. Their home was the Promised Land. And for us Christians, this world is not our home.
It isn't? Well then, what is our home? We're living here. So how can this world not be our home, Mr. Nate?
I can answer that. You're a girl, so obviously your home is Pluto. Everybody knows that girls are too weird and strange to actually be from Earth. You were probably dropped off by accident, or maybe you escaped, when the UFOs first brought space pizza to the ancient Egyptians. You're really an escaped alien criminal? This explains so much. The last 6 years of my life suddenly make sense.
You're only 6 years old, and girls are definitely not from Pluto. We're not criminals, either. After all, do you think Mommy's a criminal? It's obvious to anyone that you boys are the strangers from another world. You're the ones who keep trying to blow it up.
Okay, kids. Hold your hippos. Remember that you're supposed to be loving each other more than you love yourselves, like Jesus did for us. Both boys and girls were made for this world, and were born here. But because of sin, this world is full of sorrow. The Israelites, as slaves, were often sad in the land of Egypt. They longed for the home that God had promised them, the Promised Land.
I think that's kind of like being Christians, Mr. Nate, because Mommy says that she wishes she could go to heaven because it's going to be so great and she can't wait to get there. So maybe we feel the same way, but we don't have the mean Egyptians. Is that right, Mr. Nate?
Right. And instead of a place on the earth, we've been promised heaven. Actually, a whole new heaven and a new earth, where sin is no more, and we will be with God forever.
Wait. So will there be pizza there?
There will be feasting. And what is feasting without pizza? So yes, I'm going to say that there could be pizza in heaven.
All right. Then I'm on board.
Myths, legends, and folk tales are three kinds of stories that people tell, especially in the ancient world. These different kinds of stories help both grown-ups and kids understand what is important to their culture and civilization. Learning about myths, legends, and folk tales lets us better understand what people believe. Folk tales are easy to understand because everyone realizes that they aren't really true. Fairy tales are a good example of a folk tale. Or maybe you've heard about Paul Bunyan, or Johnny Appleseed, or maybe the Jackalope. Aesop's fables are a famous example from Greece. These stories can often teach us something, but mostly they're for fun. Legends are usually stories about important events or people. Some of the details might be different than what actually happened, but the important part of the legend is remembered as we tell the story. George Washington cutting down his father's cherry tree is a famous example, or the first Thanksgiving that was celebrated by the Pilgrims. Legends like these teach us to always tell the truth, or how to bravely settle the wilderness, or give thanks to God for when he helps us. Myths can be the trickiest to learn about. Myths are stories that people tell about gods and goddesses, about magic, or about something supernatural. Creation myths, for example, tell about the beginning of the world, how and why it was made. Those who tell these stories often believe them to be true, at least in part. But those who don't believe in those gods or that magic or those events, the myths, usually think that they are only stories, that they are false. As Christians, we believe that only the Bible is true, and that every other story about a god, goddess, power, or magical event is ultimately false. However, those who aren't Christians believe that the Bible is no different than any other myth. Today, myth has come to mean a story about gods or magic that isn't real, but some people believe in it.
Okay then, so a myth is something that is not true, but people believe in it.
Yes, there are, or were at least, some people who believe in it. Myths are often the stories of religion. They tell about the gods and goddesses of that religion and what they did.
Okay, so if we had a myth about a mighty turkey chicken that was awesome and powerful and caused the most trouble of any creature in the world.
Well, that would probably be more like a folktale, unless people wanted to worship the turkey chicken as a trouble-causing god.
Ah, okay. So, if it's just an average, ordinary turkey chicken and it's just causing trouble for all the kids in a town, then it's probably a folktale. But if people wanted to worship the turkey chicken and pray to the turkey chicken and offer sacrifices to the turkey chicken and then ask the turkey chicken to help them cause trouble,
then that would probably become a myth. It would be a story about a turkey chicken who was a god.
Why would anyone want to worship a god who causes trouble? I mean, who would even believe that there could be a turkey chicken or that it would be able to cause trouble? That doesn't make any sense.
And yet, many people do worship gods and goddesses who are tricky or even terribly evil. Sometimes they do it because they like trouble, and other times they do it from fear. They hope that by worshiping these gods and goddesses, they themselves will be able to escape from trouble. And the size and shape and look of the idol doesn't matter if it has power.
But we know that God is in control of everything, don't we, Mr. Nate? I mean, good things and bad things. So worshiping those idols wouldn't do any good. I mean, look at the 10 plagues, right? The idols of Egypt couldn't do anything to stop God.
You're right, Nellie. But this is one of the ways that Satan lies to people and tries to lead them away from God. He tries to make them believe that something or someone other than God has the power to help them. But God has time and again proven throughout the Bible that he has the power to work miracles. While the false gods, the idols, are just powerless pieces of wood, stone, iron, silver, or gold. Another of Satan's lies about God tries to convince people that he doesn't have any real power. Satan tries to make them believe that God isn't any different from the false dead idols worshipped by the ancient peoples. He does this by trying to make people believe that the Bible is just another set of myths.
Well, just to be clear here, I'm not planning to worship any turkey chickens. The ancient Egyptians had lots of strange-looking gods and goddesses, so I was just trying to imagine something strange of my own.
That's good to know. Whatever their reasons for worshiping, people throughout human history have told stories about their gods and goddesses. These stories, these myths, teach and explain and entertain. Even though mythology isn't truth, mythology is still important to study and understand. But it makes us ask questions like, why do we believe the stories in the Bible, but not these stories? Over time, you'll see the differences for yourself by really looking at the Bible and these myths. My youngest sister said this about reading the myths. Myths tell stories about gods who act like people. They get jealous, angry, or selfish. The Bible tells about a holy and perfect God who loved the world so much he sent his only son to save them from their sins. That's a story unlike anything anybody would have made up. The gods of mythology are made in man's image. The God of the Bible made us in his image. In Romans 1:23, Paul explains how ungrateful humans exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and reptiles. He may have had the Egyptian idols specifically in mind. The Egyptians often carved their idols with human bodies and animal heads. Now it's time to learn about some of the most important gods and goddesses in the Egyptian pantheon. Do you know that word, pantheon?
Nope, not at all. But maybe it's a kind of space pizza. Maybe it has pineapples and peppers and some sausages and those little fishies. What are those little fishies called? Oh yeah, anchovies. Yeah, it's got some anchovies on it, probably.
No, pantheon has nothing to do with space pizza. And who would ever put anchovies on their pizza? Ew, Ted.
I would. You haven't lived until you've tried a slice of my signature classic pineapple pepperoni sausage anchovy double cheese thick crust pizza. You'll have to excuse me. I'm drooling so much that I need to go get a bucket and a mop.
And we lost Ted again. Nelly, just because you don't like a food doesn't mean that someone else can't enjoy it. You should always be willing to at least try new things. Who knows? Maybe it will become your favorite thing too.
I don't need to try it because I can already tell it's going to be totally gross and disgusting, Mr. Nate. I mean, this is Ted we're talking about here. He's like the king of all the weird foods in the world.
Well, it's up to your parents what you eat and when or if you have to try new foods anyways. But while we wait for Ted, let's talk about what pantheon means. Pantheon is from the Greek word pan, meaning all, and theos, meaning God. A pantheon includes all the gods and goddesses that a particular culture worships. So we could speak of the Greek pantheon, Zeus, Athena, Ares, and so forth, or the Norse pantheon, Thor, Odin, Freya, etc. The Egyptians worshipped the sun, the Nile, cats, cobras, and a host of other idols. But that wasn't all. Pharaoh was also one of the gods of Egypt. And each living pharaoh was supposed to be an earthly incarnation of Horus, the son of Isis and Osiris. And when he died, he supposedly turned into Osiris. The Egyptian pantheon had hundreds of gods and goddesses. Here are just a few of the most important ones that you should know about.
Okay, wait. Let me go find my pencil, okay? And I'm going to get my notepaper, all right? Yeah. And then I'm going to get some crayons, and I get some glue, and I'm going to get some glitter. Wait, there it is. Okay, got it. Okay, I got my crayons, my pencil, my paper, my glue, and my glitter. I'm ready. Lay it on me.
That's not a bad idea, Ted the Thread. It would probably be a lot of fun to color pictures of the gods and goddesses of Egypt, and it would help you to know which ones they were. Ra, also called Re in some books, was the god of the sun. He was definitely one of the oldest and most important gods in ancient Egypt. There were several other gods and goddesses who helped Ra move and protect the sun. His animal forms included a scarab beetle, a falcon, and a ram. Next in importance was the Nile itself, which was also worshipped as a god. This isn't surprising, given its importance to Egypt. Osiris was originally the god of plants, but he was murdered by his brother Set and hacked into pieces. His wife, Isis, found the pieces and sewed him back together again, preserving his body as the first mummy. Osiris then ruled the underworld, where people went after they died. Isis was married to Osiris, and the two of them reigned as the first king and queen of Egypt. Horus was their son. As a wife, mother, and queen, Isis was very popular, especially with women, who often prayed to her. Not only was she worshipped in ancient Egypt, but eventually she was worshipped all across the Roman Empire. Their son, Horus, took the shape of a falcon, with the sun and the moon as his eyes. He was a god of the sky and a ruler of the day. After defeating Set, Horus reigned as the king of Egypt. The pharaohs believed that they were the successors of Horus once he left Earth. Pharaoh was believed to be a god too. He was the godlike human substitute for Horus in life, and for Osiris, the father of Horus, when he died. That's important because it means that Moses' quarrel with Pharaoh wasn't just a personality clash. When Moses went head to head with Pharaoh, his battle was not just against flesh and blood. To use Paul's words in Ephesians 6:12, Moses wrestled against the rulers, the authorities, the cosmic powers over this present darkness, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly places. Moses and Pharaoh were the visible faces of an invisible war. Thoth was an ibis, which is a kind of stork. He was the god of sacred writings and wisdom. He and Isis were also the gods of magicians. Sobek was a crocodile who was worshipped as an ancient creator god. Hathor was the goddess of love and dance and beer. She was a cow. Apis was a real live bull that was supposed to be an incarnation of the creator god Ptah, just as the pharaoh was supposed to be an incarnation of Ra. And there were dozens of Apis bulls over the centuries. Hekwet, the goddess of childbirth, was a frog. Anubis was the jackal-headed god of the dead. Bast was the cat goddess of the home. Khons, the moon god, lost some of his light while gambling with Thoth. This is how the ancient Egyptians explained that the moon was less bright than the sun. Maat was the goddess of law and justice. Nut was the goddess of the sky. Selket, the scorpion goddess, was a helper of women in childbirth. Set was the god of the desert and of storms and of foreigners. He was the enemy who killed his brother Osiris. He had a human body and the head of an animal that nobody has ever been able to figure out. Perhaps it was an aardvark or a giraffe. Tawaret, the hippopotamus goddess, was another goddess of childbirth. Wepwawet was the jackal god of war and funerals. These are just a few of the hundreds of gods and goddesses that the ancient Egyptians worshipped.
Oh boy, that's pretty crazy. I mean, we have hippopotamuses, we have scorpions, we have jackals, we have bulls, we have cows, we have bears, we have storks, we have people getting chopped into pieces, we have people becoming mummies. We have mummies baking cookies. We have cookies coming out of the oven. Oh, look. Ha-ha. It's time for a cookie break. See you later. Bye-bye.
Ted, where are you going? You can't just leave in the middle of things like that. And you know those cookies are going to need to cool down. You won't be able to eat one for at least 5 to 10 minutes, Mommy said. You come back here and sit down and listen to the story.
Excuse me, Miss Nosy Needle. Everyone knows that there's a constitutional right to a cookie break, no matter what is going on. It's part of the free exercise of religion. And I've done the research. If you have a glass of nice cold milk handy, you can cut 3 minutes and 12 seconds off of the cookie cooldown period.
You can't even read the Constitution, Ted. It's full of big words. And we won't get to that until we're rhetoric students. And there isn't anywhere in the Bible that talks about having a cookie break. It's not a religious right. Oof! You just want to check and see which cookie has the most chocolate chips on it, so you can grab it first.
Whoa. Hold your hippos, you two. First of all, Nellie, you are not in authority over Ted. I'm the teacher, and it's my job to tell him to stay. Secondly, Ted, you shouldn't just leave without asking permission. That's disrespectful. Thirdly, both of you need to speak kindly to each other, not calling each other names or accusing each other. Remember what Jesus says to us in John 13. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you also are to love one another.
Nellie's my cousin, and a girl. But I get your point, Mr. Knight. Nellie, I'm sorry I called you a nosy needle.
I forgive you, and I'm sorry for being bossy. I know you're working hard to learn to read, and it wasn't kind for me to say that you couldn't.
I forgive you too. Now, Mr. Knight, can I please have a cookie break? I really won't be able to think about anything else until I have at least sniffed that glorious smell of succulent sugar and melted chocolate up close and personal.
Good job, kids. Thank you for apologizing to each other. Jesus also says in John 13 that all people will know we are his disciples when we love each other. And yes, Ted, you may have a little break.
Woohoo!
The story of Exodus sets a bunch of helpless slaves against the full might of the Egyptian Empire. Moses, the son of a slave woman, goes up against the God-king of the greatest nation on earth. Pharaoh had an army of chariots at his command. Moses had a shepherd's staff. Moses defied Pharaoh and all the gods of Egypt. Moses said that a god that the Egyptians had never heard of demanded the release of his people. You probably know the rest of the story, but here's a quick review.
Okay, I'm back. What did I miss?
Mr. Nate's about to tell us about the 10 plagues of Egypt. Sounds gross and exciting.
Oh man, I should really have some popcorn for this.
The first plague struck the Nile, turning it to blood. The ancient Egyptians worshipped the Nile as a god, so they would have had to pray to the river to heal itself. This demonstrated the power of Moses' God right from the beginning, because the Nile was helpless to heal itself. The second plague drove all the frogs out of the river. The Egyptians might have considered praying to Hekwit, the frog goddess of childbirth, but it didn't do them any good. Pharaoh had to ask Moses to get rid of all the frogs. Moses spoke, and the frogs died. The Egyptians then piled them up into heaps where they rotted and stank.
Ugh, just the thought of all those smelly, slimy frogs. Rotting in the hot desert sun is enough to ruin my appetite for at least a week. Mr. Nate, can I leave the room? I think I might be sick.
Oh, yeah. Tell her more about this. I heard a rumor that there's a bake sale happening this weekend. If we're lucky, she'll give me cookies today and all her share of the pies and cakes and the other delicious goodies on Saturday. Keep going. More about the frogs.
It was a truly, terribly, awful stink. It was so bad that the entire land of Egypt reeked of it. The third plague filled the land with gnats. The magicians of Egypt were able to duplicate the first two plagues somehow, but they had trouble conjuring up gnats. They probably prayed to Thoth, the god of magicians. It didn't do them much good. Even the magicians had to admit that this was the finger of God. The fourth plague filled the land with swarms of flies. And this was the first plague where only the Egyptians had trouble. The land of Goshen, where the Israelites lived, was protected by God. There were no flies. It was clear that the Egyptian gods could not protect the Egyptians, while God obviously protected the Israelites. The fifth plague struck all the livestock of Egypt with disease. The priests may have cried out to the cow goddess Hathor, or to Apis, the bull god, but it didn't do any good. When the sixth plague brought boils on all the Egyptians, Pharaoh's magicians could not even stand up because of their painful sores. They may have called upon Isis, the goddess of healing and magic, but it did them no good. The seventh plague devastated the land with hail. The people may have begged for protection from Horus, god of the sky, or even from his evil uncle, Set, who was supposed to be responsible for stormy weather. Perhaps they asked Osiris, the god of crops, for help, but nothing worked. The eighth plague of locusts demonstrated how impotent Osiris was. He could not save their farms.
Ah, okay. What is a locust? Is that something that you eat? Is it crunchy? Is it a dessert? Can we have more cookies?
No. A locust is a type of grasshopper. It's very hungry and will eat all the green plants that it can find.
Ted, you are going to eat a bug.
Well, John the Baptist ate locusts and wild honey, and honey is sweet, so I thought that maybe they were some kind of dessert. I suppose locusts could have been cornbread, because some people like putting honey on that too.
Ugh, I just can't stop imagining all those legs twitching and kicking while trying to eat one. Yuck. I'm not going to be able to even look at food for the rest of the day, Mr. Nate. This is a really gross lesson.
Ha ha! The plan is working. You're doing great, Mr. Nate. Keep up the good work.
Ra, the sun god, and all of his helper gods and goddesses could not overcome the 3 days of darkness when God sent the ninth plague. In a land where the sun shone so brightly, day after week, after month, after season, after year, after decade, after century, this must have been a truly terrifying plague for the ancient Egyptians. Even Pharaoh could not save his firstborn son from the power of the angel of death, which devastated Egypt during the final 10th plague. All of the firstborn children of Egypt died. These plagues demonstrated God's power over the idols. The gods of Egypt were helpless before the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Pharaoh, although they called him divine, could not protect his firstborn son from the wrath of the Almighty. The last plague led to the Passover meal, which points ahead to a power even greater, God's triumph over our sin on the cross. When God delivered his people out of bondage, he put every power of Egypt to shame. Not only did his people go free, they took the treasures of Egypt with them. All these things took place as an example for us. We live in a different world today, but the human craving for idols has not changed. We don't worship statues anymore, but our hearts are still longing for something bigger than we are, that we can turn to for meaning and for control. The Egyptians bowed themselves down to frogs and beetles. What is it that you're tempted to worship? Is it video games, popularity, money,